All right. So three things that we want to look at. Persecution. Okay. Persecution of God's people. All right. So that's one of the most unpopular subjects in the church today, especially for our generation. Actually, I think I'm like X generation or Y generation. Like, you guys are like the Z or whatever generation. I don't know how they do that, but, you know, according to MSN, I'm like the previous generation. Okay, so you guys are the current generation. And what they tell, what psychology, where's Jay? Okay, what psychology tells me, right, is that with each preceding generation, there is a decrease of patience and an increase of impatience, meaning you want stuff now, right? And, you know, and so when you watch TV, you can, like, see the commercials, and the best example, I guess, being Burger King, have it your way, right? And they probably have, like, a little subtitle, right now, right? So that's the current generation, right now, right, the way I want it right now, okay? And also, this current generation also does not like the idea of suffering. And we are far removed from it, especially in this area, right? And I always think it's pretty interesting that I remember when back in the day before Obama was president, we had another guy in the White House named George Bush, okay? And that's when the gas prices started going up nationally, okay? The national average. It went up like 5 cents, okay? And I remember reading an article on MSN, people in the country were like driving less. People were taking the bus more, or the trains and whatever, right? Not because they have to, but because they want to, because they want to save money on gas or whatever, right? And stuff like that. And I thought that was pretty interesting, right? And then I was like watching the news. While the whole nation was like trying to save money on gas, our neighborhood in Fairfax County, there was very little difference, right? And so the news was talking about like, yeah, like everybody in the country is like driving less. We don't. Like, they were showing how like numbers of like SUVs sales were going down because people were like, oh, they eat a lot of gas. But in our area, the sales of SUVs stay the same, okay? So people are doing exactly the same, didn't matter. Because it's all about what I want now. I don't want to suffer. I don't want to have to work for it. I want my way right now. Okay, that's our current generation's mindset. And so embedded in that is the idea of suffering. We don't like the idea of suffering, right? Because honestly, you know, myself included, when we see commercials for World Vision or Compassion, most likely, you have like chips or soda in your hand and or stuff all over your, you know, mouth from snacking, and you're like, you feel really guilty. So what do? Change the channel. Okay? Well, maybe I'm the only one, but, you know, that's what I would do. Because we don't like suffering. We don't like the idea of suffering. We don't like seeing suffering. Okay? And to a certain extent, in America, we're kind of away from that because we don't really see suffering people in our neighborhoods. Like, I don't walk outside, well, sometimes. I don't walk outside my building and I don't see, like, homeless people. Okay? You gotta go to Richmond to do that. Okay? But my house, and even Annandale, ghetto Annandale, you walk outside my building, I don't see homeless people or people that are sick and they don't have money, so, you know, they're begging for money or stuff like that. We don't see that. Our mindset is that suffering is something foreign, something alien. We don't like it. We don't want it. We don't want to touch it. The problem is the Bible talks about suffering a lot. And so let's see what David has to teach us about suffering for us, for the church, and what God shows us about suffering. So the first lesson we see is the persecution of falsehood. Persecution of falsehood, or persecution of based on lies. All right. So where is that from? It's from Shimei or Shimei, okay, and his accusations against David. If you read carefully what he says to David, it's very interesting. He says that David is a man of bloodshed or violence. It's true. Okay. The Lord has returned upon you all the bloodshed of the house of Saul, in whose place you have reigned. And the Lord has given the kingdom into the hand of your Absalom. Okay? Check this out. Shimei. Whether or not he knew exactly what he was saying and the weight of what he was saying, probably not. But from this point in history, we look back and we see a couple interesting things. First of which is, he mixes a little bit of truth and a little bit of lie. Okay? So it's true that David was a violent man. Okay? He hurt people. He killed people. Okay? David was a soldier. That's his job. Right? And so when his commander says, go and do this, he goes and does it. All right? One of the first pictures of David that we see in the Bible is David and Goliath. He doesn't just knock out Goliath and just kind of go over and go, hey, tag, I win. You know? Cuts his head off. Okay, David is like a man's man, right? We already talked about that. So, David is a violent guy, that's true. But then, there's also this addition of, he's accusing David of killing Saul and screwing him over. That's a lie. Okay? That's a complete lie. Because if we go back to 1 Samuel, we see, actually, that's what Saul tried to do to David. Okay, Saul was the one that tried to kill David. Saul was the one that was trying to screw him over in many different ways. All right. So why is that such a big deal? In this story, Shimei or Shimei actually represents the devil and the way that the devil accuses believers. Okay, how does that work? It's like this. So when the devil comes with his accusations or even his lies, it's never a full-on lie, right? Like the devil will never come and be like, hey, Lee, guess what? Jesus was a woman. It's ridiculous. Okay, he knows that. He knows that if we get hit with that, we're going to be like, what? What are you? You know? It's a knee-jerk reaction. We're not going to accept it, okay? But the devil, what he'll do is he'll mix a little bit of truth. Right? In essence, what he's doing is he's mixing a little bit of honey with poison. And he's allowing that little bit of truth to kind of fool us, and we just accept it as truth. Right? We see this example. I'm a big fan of certain contemporary Christian music. Most of it is garbage, but some of it is still good. There's a band out of Texas called Shane and Shane. Okay, two dudes. They're kind of fat now because now they're all married. Shane Bernard and Shane Everett, right? A couple albums ago, they had this song called "Embracing Accusations." Okay, and the story behind that song is pretty amazing. And if you listen to it, it's kind of at first you're like, "What the heck?" Because it has words, things like the devil is preaching the gospel. And you're like, how does that work? Okay? So now all of you guys are going to go home and YouTube it or something, right? And so the story goes like this. He says he was at the beach doing quiet time. Okay? Doing quiet time at the beach is always awesome. Okay? And he was reading through, I believe it was Galatians, okay? Around chapter 4, chapter 5, okay? And what he read was, everyone who sins is under the curse of the law. And at that moment, the devil threw that at him and said, hey, guess what? You're a sinner. You have no hope. And so Shane Bernard, he said at that moment, he was hit with this great weight of his sin, that there was actually, oh my goodness, I am guilty. I am deserving of eternal punishment, with no sign of hope. And so he said, you know, it was a very dark place that the devil had taken him into. And he had given him truth. And then if you listen to the song, the last bridge part, what he talks about is, but the devil had only thrown him a half-truth. Because what Shane Bernard did to kind of get out of that was he read on. And what it said was, but thanks be to God, because Jesus became cursed for us, right, as he hung on the cross. Right? And so that's kind of like what is going on here, right? Shimei or Shammai, okay, he's accusing David. He's throwing all these things at David with half-truth. Right? Now, why is he doing that? Again, the devil does that to us not to mess us up in terms of to make us not Christian. Okay, there's nothing the devil can say or do to you that will take away your faith. Okay? So there's nothing that Shimei or Shammai is going to say to David that's going to make David not king anymore. Okay, that is, he doesn't have that power. What he is trying to do is actually just trying to trip him up a little bit. Just for the sake of bothering. In essence, it's devil is like a gnat. Okay? Just annoying. They serve no purpose. Okay? I'm sure in heaven there is no gnats. Or Jesus will say, this is the reason why I created that. But anyway, on this side of heaven, we don't know why they're here. We don't know why mosquitoes exist. Okay? But they're really annoying. Okay? So the devil, okay? Bad analogy. But the devil, right? He's gonna throw these words and these accusations to us, not to take away our faith, but to trip us up, to mess us up. Or like in Shane Bernard's example, kind of throw you in the depths of depression, spiritual depression. Right? Again, the devil is not trying to mess up your faith. He can't take away your faith. But he is trying to mess you up in terms of your growth or your relationship. Okay? It's almost, last example, it's almost like when you're in a relationship with a person, right? And your friend, who's always the good friend, good intentions, they say something about your significant other, and you're like, what the? They're like, oh, did you know he or she said this, or he or she did that? And you hear it, and you're like, okay. That's kind of what the devil was doing. In your relationship with God, it's all good. And then the devil comes and goes, hey, Johnny, did you know that God is like this? And you're like, what the? Okay. He's trying to mess up that relationship a little bit. He can't take it away, but he's trying to mess it up. All right. So, second lesson. Persecution of Warren. Okay. Or persecution of, I don't want to say deserving, but the best word I could think of is Warren. What does that mean? This is kind of like the hardest lesson, I think, from today. It's the idea, it's the fact that in the Bible, the church is called the suffering church. The church is the persecuted church. Okay? We see in John 16:33, Jesus says, in this world, you will have trouble. Right? He doesn't lie. He don't sugarcoat it. He just tells you like it is. In this world, you're going to get messed up. Okay? And so, what I learned from seminary, right, it's called ecclesiology, or the study of the church. And right now, in the present time, the church is what... That's what's called the suffering church. Okay, the church is suffering. Again, when we first hear it in North America, in Fairfax, Virginia, our suffering would be like, oh my gosh, our church doesn't have this. Our church doesn't have like a youth group lounge where we have PS3 and Xbox. Or for our church, oh my gosh, our church Wi-Fi is so ghetto. It's so slow and sometimes it doesn't even work right. Okay, that's our persecution, right? But if we look at it globally, look at the church globally, okay, it's under attack everywhere, worldwide. China, North America, or China, North Korea, right? Afghanistan, Pakistan, India, major parts of Africa, major parts of Middle East, even in Western Europe. Did you know that right now in Western Europe, Christianity is quickly becoming a very, very small and insignificant and very heavily persecuted minority, religious-wise? In France, there is estimate about 5 years ago, about 100,000 Christians in that entire country. Right? And this is from a missionary to France. Right, and he got that stat from like one of the government people or something like that. Like they did a national survey, and only 100,000 or something, some ridiculous number, like 1% of the nation's population said that they believe in Jesus Christ. Okay, even Germany, and all these countries of in history, we look back, their church was so strong there. It's dying because it's been persecuted, laughed at, snuffed out. And so the church right now is definitely under persecution from many different angles, not just straight up violence. Okay? So a lot of countries, you know, in Africa and Middle East, it is straight up violence. If you're a Christian, they will try to kill you. I think the latest I read from, I think it was in Pakistan, where this, it was a young girl, like 14, 15-year-old girl, and she got locked up because she was accused of being a Christian, and the police locked her up for her own safety because apparently the local people heard about the fact that she was a Christian, and they came to the police station demanding that she be released so that they can kill her. Okay, this stuff happens like right now. Okay, and I actually heard this, and I'm reading about this article, and the article also goes into the fact that right now, in certain parts of the world, being a Christian is so bad that, for example, I think it was in Pakistan, right? They said if you are unhappy with a business arrangement, right, and they tell this story about this guy, he borrowed money from like his brother-in-law or something, and the brother-in-law wanted the money back, but the guy was like, I don't have it, I can't give it to you. And so to put him in jail, the brother-in-law went to a cop and said, hey, guess what, he's a heretic, he's a Christian. And so he got locked up. He had to wait there until like they found a lawyer, you know, who went to the judge and stuff and got him out. But that kind of stuff happens right now, right? And I think the most amazing stat that I heard is that all the Christians that the Roman government killed in their history, you know, like in the Colosseum and stuff like that, right? And Nero and his craziness stuff he used to do, right? That's still less than all the number of Christians that died under the Roman Empire is still less than how many Christians will die this year for their faith. Okay? The church is a suffering church. It's a persecuted church right now. Peter, 1 Peter chapter 4 says this, beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery ordeal, or modern day translation, don't be surprised at the hot situation that you find yourself in, which comes to you for your testing or for your growth, for your refinement. And don't look at it as if that was something strange and alien. But to the degree that you share the suffering of Christ, keep on rejoicing. So that at the revelation of his glory when Jesus comes, you may rejoice with exultation. We could do a whole other message just on those verses, but for today's message, simply this. It is ridiculous to think that we profess to follow a persecuted Christ and we don't expect to be persecuted ourselves. Okay? If the world persecuted our Savior, it's only logical that we, if we are his true followers, then the world will persecute us too. I mean, Jesus says it as much. And so whenever I complain that, you know, Christian life is hard, you know, my mom always says, don't be stupid. Jesus got screwed over by so many people. He got screwed over by everybody, you know, and even his friends ditched him at the last hour. If you say you're a true Christian, guess what? Don't be surprised that happens to you. Basically, that's my mom's translation of 1 Peter chapter 4. Okay? So we are a persecuted church in the global sense. And even in Virginia, Fairfax County, there are a lot of things that are happening. But it can easily become a political thing, so I'm not going to go there. The third lesson, last lesson, persecution of the king. So how do we make sense of all of this persecution? This accusation from the devil, persecution from the world. The last lesson is this persecution of the king. Okay? And so David here in this story, as he does in many different places, serves as a sign to Jesus who would later come, right, to his great son, or the great son of David. Because notice what Abishai does to David. He curses at him, he spits at him, and he throws things at him. Right? And we know from watching Passion, from reading the Gospels, that's exactly what happens to Jesus on his way to the cross. Right? People spit on him, people are yelling at him. And so, a little bit like we just touched, right? The church is a persecuted church because we serve a persecuted Lord. However, the crazy thing about God is that he takes the weakened, the thrown away, the spit upon, the cursed on, and he uses that for victory. That's the craziest part. Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, consider your calling, brothers, that you are not, many of you were not wise according to the flesh, not many of you were strong, and not many of you were noble. But here's the kicker, verse 27. But God has chosen the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. God has chosen the weak things of the world to shame those things which are strong, and the base things of the world, so that the despised things God has chosen, so that he may nullify the things that are, so that no man can boast before God. So this persecution of David foreshadows to us the persecution that Christ will endure. In coming to the world, persecution from the Pharisees, persecution from Pilate at his trial, persecution from the crowd as he goes to the cross, and even persecution from the people watching him on the cross, and one of the robbers with him on the cross. Right? Endured all those things. But Hebrews chapter 12, verse 2. Christ endured the cross, despising its shame. And so the second lesson showed us that the church is a suffering church. That's totally true. But at the same time, simultaneously, the church is also the victorious church. Right? The church is suffering, but the church is also victorious. How is that possible? Because, see, for humans, it makes no sense. How does something that suffers and gets beaten up and spit on and crapped on, how does that become victorious? Therein lies the power of the gospel. The things, right, even on Jesus, right, Peter says that Jesus is like a stone that the builders rejected and threw away. But that stone has become the capstone, the cornerstone of the church. Right? And so the church is suffering, but we're still victorious. Because why? Because the church might be, we get locked up, burned up, cut up, shot up. But we still, the church is still growing. The church is going to places that it's never gone before. Did you know that this year, people groups, right? People groups, I'm talking straight up people just living in the jungle. They will hear the gospel for the first time in their lives. And it's going to blow their minds. There's people that are literally translating the Bible into new languages under secrecy, in hiding on the road. Right? They got to do this on laptops with like satellite connection because they can't just sit at home like you and me and just do it. Because they'll get, you know, they'll get trouble. They'll be executed, go to jail. But they're doing that because they're translating it for people that don't have the gospel. But because of people like that, church is growing. It's a crazy thing because it is the power of God. That's why Paul says, right? The gospel is foolishness to the world, but it is power unto salvation for those that believe. And so we see today the suffering king, the lesson of the suffering king, that the devil would throw accusation at us. A little bit of truth mixed with some false, try to trip us up. We also see the persecution of the church, that the marks of persecution in the church is actually, it's a proof, the Bible actually says, it's a proof that we are actually the church. Okay, like I said before, if we follow a persecuted Christ, it's logical that the church is also bears the marks of persecution. And lastly, the persecution of the king. That we serve a king persecuted, but we also see a king that is resurrected and victorious. And that the world has never seen before and since this man who was so obviously devastated and destroyed. The world has never seen such a man be so victorious and has such a huge ripple effect that the world is, after 2,000 years, still reeling, still feeling the effects of it. And so in conclusion, what do we do with this? Couple applications, persecution. Do we bear the marks of persecution for our faith? And this is not just necessarily from unbelievers. Because a lot of times, so-called Christians and church people, man, we're really good at persecuting each other. Marks of persecution. Do we have it? Do we run from it? I wonder how many of us, if being a Christian meant that we need to get whipped every time we walk in that building, how many of us would actually come back? And then the second application is victory. That though we are beaten up, we are chewed on, we are crushed, we are not destroyed. Might be persecuted, might be abandoned by our friends and our family, but we are not destroyed. As we follow our Savior down the road of persecution, we also eventually follow Him onto glory and victory. Let's pray.